This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel will join us, and we will go over Game 7 of the NBA Finals. For the first time in 9 years, we will get a seventh and deciding game in the NBA Finals. And boy, it's been a strange series. We thought that as the Pacers just dominate the game here in Game 6, recording this minutes after the conclusion, that was a game that was 10-2 OKC. I figure, all right, maybe OKC is just kind of broken them. Talked about Game 4, stealing that game at the end, winning Game 5, in control most of that game, and figuring the better team is possibly taking over. Well, not the case. From 10-2 OKC to very shortly after that, a run by OKC, a flurry by Indy, and just another night where OKC on the road can't buy a shot. Just horrible, horrible three-point shooting. And basically, 1 of 17 from 3 in the competitive portion of this game. From, I would say, really halftime on, the first few minutes of the third quarter, this was decorated garbage time. None of the starters for OKC played in the fourth quarter. They actually ended up losing only by 17, 108-91, I believe, was the final margin, where this was a 30-point game heading into the fourth. So, again, you're dealing with 12 minutes plus of complete garbage time, and it sets up a Game 7. Now, look, I was doing the show Thursday night with Matt Humans, and I said before the game, I said, you never want to make a bet you don't think he's going to win, .. But I did see one book, FanDuel had the Pacers 12-1 to win the series. And I said it on the air. I didn't bet it. I do wish I had. 12-1 seemed like a lot because they had a home game in Game 6 and then Game 7, who knows? And maybe the Pacers get a lead and you can figure out a way to monetize that ticket, of course. Didn't pull the trigger, and now that 12-1 is long, long gone. I ultimately think the Thunder win the game. Don't love the idea of laying 8.5. If I had to play it here, 8.5 total of 214. So you know what's tough? These books are adjusting. These books have gotten a lot smarter. Usually, I mean, think about it. Game 1, the total was 231.5. We're down just 2 weeks later to 214. So these books are smarter. They don't just post and copy the Game 6 line. They adjust for the fact that Game 7s are closer, lower scoring, slower tempo. This Game 6 went way under, which hurts your angle here for a Game 7 under. I'd still probably only look towards an under, but it's adjusted properly, unfortunately. Again, all good trends eventually die. That Game 7 under was a good trend for a while, but looking forward to it. I mean, this series, regardless of what happens on Sunday, I mean, you get to sit down Sunday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, June 22nd, so it takes you all the way basically till the last week of June, and enjoy a Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So this, for a series that was a minus 700 favorite with OKC going in, you've gotten your money's worth. I mean, we sat here, we didn't do much NBA. You know, the fall with football, eventually that takes you into the winter. A lot of college basketball, March Madness, baseball. Once the NBA playoffs have started, we've done a lot of basketball, and we will continue to do basketball at least for another show here. I'll record right after the game on Sunday. So this series is giving you your money's worth, though, bottom line. The Game 1 was a classic. Game 4 was good. And Game 5 had its moments. Game 6, so, I mean, you had your blowouts here and there. It's not like night in, night out. You've had competitive games, and all six have been competitive. Reminds me a little bit. It was actually last time an NBA Finals went 7. It was 2016, where you think of it, classic series, seventh game was close. It was tied late. It was a rock fight. But all six of those games prior to that were pretty much blowouts. None of the six games were close, and then Game 7 was a classic. This has not been quite that extreme because, again, Game 4 was good. Game 5 was a two-point game in the fourth quarter, but and game 1 was really outstanding. That was the highlight of the series so far. Game 2 blowout, Game 6 blowout. It's been an entertaining series. I wouldn't say it's been a classic, but you're getting a seventh game. You got a huge favorite on the verge of disaster here. If they were to lose this, I know they're young. They'll be back, all of those things. You can't lose this series if you're OKC. So I think they'll win. I'm in no hurry to lay the 8.5. If I had to take it or lay it, boy, I would probably take it. It's close. I think the number is right. And remember, this is the 8.5, not only because Indy blew them out in Game 6, but with a lower total, you're going to get a lower point spread, figuring the game's going to be just closer to the vest, lower scoring. And this is the lowest spread we've seen in OKC. The other night was 9, 9.5 in game number 5. Game one was 10.5, and game two, after OKC was down 1-0, was in that 11, 11.5 range. So this is, you're getting, if you feel strongly about OKC and say game six is a blip on the radar, you're getting a discount on OKC. I understand that, and I wouldn't be shocked if OKC wins by 15 or 20 points and creates a million turnovers. But again, the game seven, where you expect it to be close and low scoring, that 8.5 seems like a lot, and I just worry about the Pacers. House money, nothing to lose. OKC will be tight. I think that OKC probably wins right around the margin, which again I think is a boring answer. But if I had to take it or lay it, I would. I think I would take it. So, man, a lot of drama on Sunday, and it's crazy. The draft is only 3 days after, so you got a game seven on Sunday, then the draft is 3 days later, which is about, not even about, as close as I can remember. The draft was usually on a Thursday. Last year they switched it to a Wednesday for whatever reason. This has got to be the shortest gap, shortest, quickest turnaround between game seven and a draft that I can ever remember. But it would be Pacers or nothing for me once again here in game number seven, although I did like OKC in game five. Didn't have much of a feel in game six, but give the Pacers credit. They're just a cockroach. You can't kill them. Down big in game one, down 10-2 tonight. Even in game five, they're down 18. Next thing you know, it's a 2-point game in the fourth quarter, even though OKC pulled away late. This team is so tough, so resilient. It's all cliches, but they're cliches for a reason. This team is really, really impressive. A Pacer team that, look, they're still one win away, and it's a tough one. It's a one on the road. I get that. This would be about as unlikely a champion in any sport as I can ever remember. Maybe that. The Giants team that won the first Super Bowl, even the Giants team that won the second Super Bowl, 2007 and 2011, neither of those teams really, you expected it. I guess the second one, you expected a little more because they had done it once a few years prior. But I think that Giants, I think the 2017 was like 3-5 at home. I mean, that was not a great team, but they got hot. They got a pass rush. That was a surprising champion. I mean, you get some surprising champions. It can happen in baseball with the new format. Rangers a couple years ago was surprising. But the fact that it's the NBA and it's usually a chalk sport, this would be, if not the most, on the short list of surprising champions of any sport in my lifetime, considering where they were at the start of the season, 10-15 record, a four seed coming into the East. Look, they were a little more than a coin toss. They were slight favorites over Milwaukee round one. And I know that Mavericks team in 2011 was actually, they might have been underdogs in all four rounds, even against Portland in round one. They were definitely dogs the rest of the way after that. But Pacers were big dogs in round two to the Cavs, slight underdogs in round three, and then monster dogs again in round four. So this would be either the biggest upset, most unlikely champion, I say most unlikely champion of any sport in my lifetime. It's at least on the short list. So I still don't think they do it, but I would not be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, and I wouldn't be surprised if they gave OKC a scare. And you're talking about like a 3 or 4 point game with 5 minutes to go, and it is nail biting time in OKC. So a lot of drama, should be a lot of fun. I would take the points if anything. Finals MVP is interesting, and a lot of these markets are really interesting. I'll just look at DraftKings. Instead of laying the nine, I think SGA minus $1.90 to win Finals MVP is the way to go. The market seems to think if it's Indy winning, it's Siakam who's going to be the MVP, who's plus 320. Halliburton's down to 10-1. McConnell's 120-1. I thought for a moment, and he was really good in the beginning of the game on Thursday. In game six, I thought for a moment McConnell was live at 150-1. He got down at 85-1 at one point, but he went quiet in the second half. I don't think it'll be McConnell. So, if anything, instead of laying the 8.5, I actually think there's some value on SGA. Halliburton at 10-1 is interesting, but I don't know that I would bet that. He just had a couple, he had a no-show in game five. I guess he was decent in game six, looked healthy enough, scored 14 points. But he's just had, you can't have a seven-game series where you basically have two no-shows. And 215 is the total at FanDuel, so shop around. I just don't know that you can have two games with no-shows and still win Finals MVP. So I think this market's right. And if you do like Halliburton, 14-1 at FanDuel. Meanwhile, SGA is minus 250 at FanDuel. Siakam plus 370. McConnell 200-1. It's probably SGA or Siakam. It's probably SGA or Siakam. Jalen Williams at 10-1 at FanDuel. I don't give much of a chance. So we'll see what JVT thinks. A lot of drama. Not much drama game six, but I mean, it's game seven of the NBA Finals. You can't really ask for more. So we will get to his thoughts here in a second. We had him on after game one. We'll have him on here before a game seven, right? right here to bookend the series, game one and game seven. So shocked it's gotten here, but after game one, I think I started to jump off the fade Indiana trade. You can only fade this team. You can only put your hand on the stove and get burned so many times before you learn your lesson. Say, you know what? I'm done underestimating these guys. They've got some magic, whatever you want to call it. They are, it's been a sports movie for here for the Pacers the last month, 6 weeks, and we'll see if the sports movie continues and reaches. In the sports movies, the team usually wins the championship in Hoosiers, whatever sports movie it is. The team, they cut down the nets and they write the last chapter and they win it all. We'll see if the Pacers can do that. We'll see what JVT thinks that is next. This should have been more podcasts. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. We are going to have a game seven. There is no game eight. There is no game nine. This is it. The champion will be decided on Sunday to discuss it. It's our buddy from VSiN Money Moves. It's the great Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, the best words in sports, game seven, an NBA Finals game seven, first time in almost a decade. I'm a little surprised. I'm not shocked. You can't be shocked anymore by this Pacers team. What did you expect coming into this game? And how's it going, man? Thanks for coming on.
I guess you could be shocked by the margin of victory, right? Like, I don't think it would have been surprising if I were to come in and tell you like before the game started, like, hey, the Pacers win this game. But for the Pacers to come out with a bum Haliburton and blow them out from tip to tail, that was pretty surprising how poor OKC looked. They looked like a young team that thought that they were taking on a team that's best player was hurt, and they thought they were just going to roll in there and blow them out. And that was not the case. So I think it was surprising the degree to which they won this. But I'm with you. Like, I've said this on the show. Like, look, it's time to stop. I was one that thought this was going to end in five. We discussed this. It's time to stop underestimating Indiana. They have the pieces to do it. Siakam has eaten this team alive. There's a lot to point to here, but I think the degree to which they absolutely kicked their ass is somewhat surprising for me.
Initial thoughts here. 8.5, the total. They've gotten better about this. They've gotten smarter. Game seven has typically been an underspot in an NBA, but they don't just copy and paste the game six line. You're paying a price if you want to bet that under. 214, 215 at FanDuel. Again, you can bet it. Game sevens tend to be ugly, low scoring, but it's certainly adjusted for on the line, at least in my opinion. What do you like here in game seven?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm with you. You try to bet some of these game sevens under, and it's not really the case. I mean, look at the last one that we had, right? 125-93 Thunder and Nuggets. That game went over. So I think one of the things that might behoove your audience to look at, the average margin of victory for these game sevens actually tend to be a little lopsided if you go back in recent history and look at some of them. We just mentioned 125-93. The Warriors, remember, in the first round, blew out the Rockets 103-89. Nuggets blew out the Clippers 120-101. You go back to 2024, Pacers blew out the Knicks 130-109. Heat Celtics back in 2023. If you remember, that was a 103-84 win. You kind of get the hint, right? Like, if you go back in game sevens in recent memory, they've actually been pretty lopsided. So let's say you like Oklahoma City here. I think it behooves you to kind of look around and lay some alternate numbers. As far as like what I actually like here, I mean, it's hard to kind of not play against what the flow of this series has been for the most part, right? The Thunder have been way better at home. They've been terrible on the road. They've done that throughout the postseason. It is somewhat hard to come in here and think that the Thunder will do anything but at least come in and win game seven and maybe win it by margin. But I've underestimated Indiana plenty. I think
Yeah.
I'll just stick to some player prop stuff. But I wanted to pull this up for you because I thought it was a very interesting way to look at the way this series has gone so far. I was telling Stormy on Money Moves today that this series has been very reminiscent of the Denver series that OKC just played. This is from Damon Rangula. OKC versus Denver, and then OKC versus Indiana. Game one, miraculous loss by a game winner to Denver. Game one, miraculous loss by a game winner to Indiana. Game two, easy win for the Thunder. Easy win for the Thunder again against Indiana. Game three, they lost to the Denver
Yeah.
Nuggets by nine. Game three, they lost to the Indiana Pacers by nine. Game
Wow.
four, they win by five. Game four against Indiana, they win by four. Game
Wow.
five, solid home win. Series looks done, right? They kind of win by 15 or so. Same thing they did it to Indiana. And then game six, surprising road loss to Denver. They were favored by 5.5. And then game six tonight, surprising road loss. They were favored by 5.5.
The,
so this is only, this has been identical to what they did against Denver.
The only thing is, I remember game five, Denver, OKC. That was one that was like tied with a couple minutes to go. And this one, I mean, it's nitpicking, but game five was a more thorough, more comfortable victory. But to strengthen your point, and I've made this comparison before with the Pacers with this series, they were down 71-63. I was doing the live bet shows a Sunday afternoon, game four. They're down 2-1 on the road. They're in Denver. They're down 8, 71-63. I remember saying, oh, this could be it. This could be their moment where they, you know, they either get the chest on the hair on the chest, or they're down 3-1 and they're in major trouble. They responded. And then in this game four against the Pacers, I think it was 85-75 there. 95-85 or 85-75. They were down 10, fourth quarter, and they rallied. So, man, the similarities really are remarkable.
Yep. Look, I feel like, I think that this is a very good team in Oklahoma City. I also think they're very young.
Best team ever?
Did you guys talk about, I assume you're on primetime today, right? Did this get a mention on the air?
Not on the air, no.
So for your audience, Chris Massaro, look, Chris is, I don't know if he listens to this. I'm sure he does. And I like to go friendly back and forth and jab.
Friend of
you
the
know
show,
me.
Great guy.
Yep.
To wanna,
and you know me, I'm never one to back down. Yes. And I like to have some conversations and poke the bear. Chris keeps throwing out that, you know, I or others have called OKC the greatest team ever. But every time I ask for evidence, I have been answered by silence. So today I poked it one more time and he moved the goalposts on me and then just kind of got mad. So yeah, it is what it is. Look, I've already admitted it. The Thunder were overvalued coming into the series. It's very clear at this point right now. Now, having said that, those that shape the market will. Also thought that this Thunder team was going to end the series pretty quickly. Circa, their price moved on on under 5.5 games to the under. Mike Palmas talked to us about this. It opened up even money, closed -125. We can go to every single different market for the series, and respected money that shapes the market thought that this was going to be short, but we were all wrong. So we'll see if they can pull this off. But large sample size. This has been one. This has been one of the better cover teams in the NBA this season, from regular season to postseason. They're a pretty good club, and we'll see if they'll have egg on their face by the time this series is over.
Yeah, and I think Humans between breaks, Humans had a gleeful smile. He goes, "Oh, I instigated this a little bit." So Humans likes to stir the pot. But,
Humans, that doesn't sound like him at all.
Yeah. Yes. Finals MVP. I think this is interesting, and there's some different markets. I don't know if you had a chance to look at this, and it was fun to watch these markets bounce around during the game, where McConnell got as low as 85-1.
No shot.
Yeah, no, I know. I thought maybe for a second he did in the first half, but I don't know. Halliburton is now 10-1 at DraftKings, 14-1 at FanDuel. He's had two duds, but who knows? If he has a big game seven, we'll see. The market seems to think if it's the Pacers, it's Siakam. I think, man, the best bet of all these, SGA is -190 at DraftKings. If you're going to tell me, hey, I'm going to lay the 8.5, I'm going to lay the 9, Thunder going to blow them out, I guess you could middle yourself and Williams wins. But isn't it, if OKC wins, that -190 is pretty cheap on SGA, is it not? Do you have any thoughts on this?
1,000%. I'm with you. I think there's two options here for this award, and that's it. It's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and it's Pascal Siakam. Siakam, I feel insanely strong about. If Indiana wins this series, he will. If this was a race that we could see, he would have, I don't know, I'm not good at horse racing. It is like 6 furlongs a lot. I don't know. He's way ahead of him. You know what I'm saying? He's been their most important player. He has dominated the matchups that has been given to him. Again, here today, he's got 16 points and 13 rebounds in just 32 minutes. Just ate them alive every time he gets a smaller defender on him. He's absolutely brilliant. This has been his series. He should win finals MVP if Indiana pulls this off and wins on the road. For Oklahoma City, outside of some pretty good moments, Jalen Williams tonight was awful. They were -40 in his minutes on the floor today. He scored 16 points on 6 of 13 shooting. He turned it over 3 times. He's had 3 good games in the series, and he's had 3 duds in the series. Shea's been pretty consistent outside of tonight, in which he himself was awful, but that's his only one. I don't think there's really any question. They can't win this game without Shea, and if he gives you a baseline of production, I mean, that's it. So I'm with you. If you like OKC too, I mean, you're essentially betting Thunder money line. When you're talking about Shai winning finals MVP.
And this is -190 as we're recording this. I will just throw this out there. By the time people listen to this, you might look and say, hey, it's not 190. I don't think this 190 will be there in the morning by the time people look.
No, I would agree with that. That is probably going to be that's a very cheap price considering situationally too where they're at, right? Good home team coming back off of a loss. Zigzags have been incredible, of course, in this postseason as a whole, still hitting it over 65%. The market, that seems very cheap given every situational angle you can think of for this game seven.
And you could probably take the points with Indy plus the 8.5 and lay the SGA minus 190. I don't think you're getting middled. There's a chance you win both. The chance you win both is much better than the chance that you don't win either one.
Yeah, I think the danger there would be if Indiana's inside this number, there's a pretty good shot it's in clutch time, right? 5 points, five or fewer minutes left to go. And that is when Indiana has really thrived in this series.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Thunder have won one clutch game, and that took Benedict Mathurin missing a bunch of free throws at the end of a game and all that kind of stuff in game four. I think that's like the devil's advocate against that strategy, which is if it's a tight game, that benefits Indiana, and you might be sitting in a situation where they actually win that game outright, and then, of course, it's Siakam.
Yeah, but I'm saying you take the 8.5 and you take SGA minus 190, and you know what? You might lose a little juice, a significant amount of juice, but I think there's a reasonable enough chance to scoop where I don't see yourself getting middle there. I really don't.
Yeah, I can see it. I can understand at least the logic behind it for sure.
Yeah, and again, I don't think that 190 lasts long. Is there anybody even worth taking a shot on otherwise? I mean, Halliburton 14-1. Yes, no, anything?
I mean, I guess in theory, Halliburton, but I just, dude, he hasn't been good in this series. Even in the game, when he hit a game winner, he wasn't even that good. You know, like Siakam was actually the more valuable player in game one, even though he didn't hit the game winner. Like, I'm adamant, and this would be, I'm willing to say, this might sound hyperbolic, this would be one of the bigger travesties in sports if the Pacers win and Pascal Siakam doesn't win finals MVP. That's like revolution type. We should march like the lawns of the NBA office and like revolt. I think he's been brilliant in this series. He's been way more consistent than Tyrese Halliburton. Halliburton would have to go for 50 and they win 83-80 and he hits the game winner. That's what I think it would take for him to win finals MVP on Sunday.
Well, you're in a groove here. You used behoove twice and used hyperbolic. You're on your game. You're throwing 99.
I didn't know I used behoove twice. That's a bummer. I like to, I like to have a variety with my vocabulary.
The Angels playing well has got a little pep in your step. I know the Yankees beat them on Thursday, but the Angels taking 3 out of 4, just shutting down the Yankees. That's why you got a little pep in your step. You know, Angels fan.
We talked about that, though. That was actually – I should have texted you. That was actually a really good spot for your boys to bounce back. Like, lefty on the hill for the Angels.
It was Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, too, and I know.
You're right. Yeah, but, like, this one – I mean, at the very least, this – like, I wrote about it on the website. If not now, win. Anderson stinks. He's a lefty. Yes. Yankees mashed the crap out of him. Yep. Weather was supposed to be good. I think they delayed it, like, twice for a little bit, but – like that was one of those where it's like, dude, like they have to come out here and stomp this team. And sure enough, they go over their team total, they cover the run line, they win. So, hey, man, your team's going to be fine. And then I'm telling you right now, I told this to Stormy the other day. The Angels have, I think, a 6 or a 9 game homestand coming up. They will lose that homestand probably by a lot because this is what they do. Look at what they did like a month ago. They won, I think, was it 8 straight? And then they had a homestand over the weekend against Miami and they lost the series. Like, this is exactly what they do. They pull you in, and then they're just going to absolutely shit the bed.
I had a Monday money line with OKC money line, sucker square ball parlay.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know if I'm sure you watched some of it. Man on second, ninth, nobody out, scoreless game. All you just got to do, I know it's bunt them over, hit a fly ball. I'm not usually a bunt guy, but Chisholm has a horrible bat. 10th inning, 11th inning, ghost runner can't come out. I mean, that was about as maddening as it gets. All right.
Was it Wednesday that was it Volpe who dropped?
Wednesday was bad. That's the thing. Look, it's and we'll get back to the basketball in a second.
Yeah.
It's a long season. You're going to go through slumps. You're not going to swing the bats. This is an extreme example, but guys get hot at the same time, cold at the same time. I could live with a slump. What drives me crazy about the Yankees, and this is Ben Boone's tenure here, bad base running, can't bunt. And again, I'm not a big bunt guy, but there's just no ability to play situational baseball. Getting picked off when you're not even stealing, making the first and last out at third, just bonehead base running, bad defense. It's just – and you could say, oh, well, these are major leaguers. They should know better. There's some truth to that. But what's the saying? If you're either coaching it or you're allowing it, there's just too much stupid stuff with them.
Yeah. And like I would say, like I made the case today, this was also why I thought it was a good spot for them too. Over the course of this like 7-game slump that they're in, they were hitting like 200 on balls in play. They were just getting unlucky. Judge for a while. You're like, this is, I think we expected this at some point. Judge was hitting nearly 500 on balls in play at one point. Like, yeah. So there was going to be a point where it came crashing down for a little bit just because math, and it just happened against the Angels.
And I wasn't sure, and again, we'll get back to basketball in a second. I wasn't sure. I heard a lot of this. I'm sure you did too, about the balls not carrying. There's the drag or whatever. And I was like, all right, yeah, I believe it, but I haven't really seen that in person or in play, just watching these games anecdotally. And again, go back to the Monday night game. I think it was Bellinger. It was Bellinger who hit a ball in extra innings. Right? Oh, man, that ball's like 20 rows deep. They win it. It just dies on the track. Even the cameraman went way up like it's going to be gone. Then it just dies harmlessly. So I have seen some of these balls die. Maybe that's
– Shanawell had one, I think, Wednesday where it looked like he was getting he bombed his second homer of the night. I was like, oh, that thing's out. And then it just dies to the warning track, and Judge just kind of walks under it. So I've seen a little bit, but not a ton.
Adjustments from a player standpoint, like player props, does now we've seen Wiggins be better at home than on the road because we get back to basketball here. If you're Dagnall, whose minutes get cut, whose minutes gets added? This is game seven. It's the fun thing about game sevens. It's almost like in baseball when you bring the starter out of the bullpen, like anything goes, forget feelings, forget adjustments. This is a one game season. So you got to try anything you think you can win you one game. What do you think the strategy is here, and how do you apply it to player props either side?
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to double check the box score and the game flow here really quickly, because I think the one guy that it sticks out for, I think we're going back to the well with Isaiah Hartenstein unders. So at the start of the second half, Caruso started the second half in place of Hartenstein. In the second half, now granted it's a blowout, but in the second half, he only played a 3-minute and 22-second stint in the third quarter, and that was it. I think that when you're looking at this and there's from the perspective of adjustments, I think they're going to try to go back to the start of the series where they played one big and they had these four guards out there and they were just switching everything, getting dynamics, jumping into passing lanes. So you could look at it one of two ways. It's either pro Caruso, which means, a little bit more Caruso, that because that's going to be the other dynamic. If you remember at the beginning of the series, when they started small, Dagnall elected to start Cason Wallace and not Alex Caruso. So I do wonder if maybe Caruso gets the nod this time instead of Wallace in the starting lineup. But either way, I think it is Isaiah Hartenstein whose minutes get cut. He's a fine defender, but he just doesn't really give you much on offense. He's only got that little floater that he can hit every once in a while. Chet, at least, as poor as he's been, can space the floor, can hit threes, can drive every once in a while. I think that means Hartenstein's minutes get cut into. So I think that's what you're looking at for player props. And I would just say really quickly, too, I would continue, because this is what I've been doing, to continue singing his praises. I think you're going Siakam. I had over 28.5 points and rebounds tonight. And I think you're going to continue to play that. That is just a matchup that they just do not have an answer for. And if they do play smaller, that is four guards where Siakam is going to be able to get a size advantage on almost every single one of them. They use it a ton. He seals this guy off. They get it down to him. He should be able to eat again. I think anything like points and rebounds over, unless it's astronomical, tonight it was 28.5, or over points for Siakam. I think that's another way to look at it.
Was this OKC team even just slightly overrated?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say that, right? Because, like, to that actual point, like, I didn't fire this back of Massaro. I kept the bullet in the chamber. Will, they're still, for the entire season, are covering at about a 56, 57% clip, depending on where you look. So what is your definition of overrated in this series? Were they over, like, was the power rating too high? Yeah, like, clearly. They were -750 favorites. Everything moved to the direction of this being a short series. So was this mispriced for the NBA Finals? Absolutely. To call them overrated as a whole, well, guess what? If you're fading them since day one, you are in a massive hole. Like, they are covering numbers left and right. So I think in the sense of where they were priced for this series, yes, they were overrated. But in the grand scheme of what this season is, large sample size, I don't think you can realistically make the argument that they were overrated.
How about this four-day span? Game seven of the NBA Finals Sunday. Take Monday off, take Tuesday off, and then Wednesday we have a draft. It used to be Thursday, and the game sevens are always on Sunday. I can't imagine we've ever had a shorter gap. Do you have any draft takes, any intel? What are your thoughts here on a draft that is going to come just like minutes after the game seven, which is an odd dynamic when you think about it?
Yeah, it's been an odd dynamic, and truthfully, I haven't really like kept up with much with the NBA draft, because the problem is they just don't put anything up market-wise, right? Like, there's barely anything. We're starting to get things over the last like 24 hours, 48 hours. In terms of where it's looking, I'll say that really quickly. Liam McNeely, reading a lot and seeing him draft positions at about 21.5. That seems like an underplay, kind of reading the tea leaves of where he's at, where he's going to be invited. And this isn't like anything crazy because I haven't seen anything for him. So I want to try to find some draft positioning for him. Neek Clifford out of Colorado State was just invited to the NBA draft.
Your
green
boy.
Room. Yes. If you remember, I've loved that kid since it was part of the run for the Colorado State Rams. I kept referencing, hey, this kid's going to be a lottery pick or a first round pick. I think he's going to be a lottery pick. So depending on where that draft position gets opened up, he's a freak. He's awesome. And by a lot of what I've been reading, he's been rising up boards. So again, it depends on where it's at, but I think you could hear Neek Clifford's name get called relatively early by the expectation.
Some of my books will have to be drafted in the top 10. I think they're down now, but they don't want to get caught with their pants down. So they post them, you know, in the morning or whatever. So with Clifford, could he sneak in the top 10 or would it be late lottery, like 11, 12, 13, 14?
I think it depends on the price. I mean, yeah, obviously,
you'd be getting a huge number, I think.
Yeah. Like if you're getting a big number, I think it's worth a small sprinkle. Because as we all know, and if you don't follow the NBA draft, it's once you get past the top prospects, which is generally in this draft, I think the top three, it's a crapshoot. It's feeling, it's projection, it's all sorts of stuff where you, like all
interview,
these teams.
How did he interview or whatever? Yeah.
It's deeply personal in terms of how these teams evaluate these guys. And that sounds like every draft, but for the NBA, it can get very random. So we've seen it a ton, but I'm with you. Like if it's a very big price, I think top 10, it would be worth looking at Clifford. I mean, the kid's 6'7". He can shoot. His arms go down to the floor, right? Like he's super long, very athletic. I think he's going to really be a great prospect to build on, and I think a lot of teams are going to like that.
Yeah, I've seen Knipple, the Duke kid, 6.5. I have a hard time, and this is no intel, but Hornets 4, Jazz 5, Wizards 6. And man, these teams that have horrible seasons, you end up 4, 5, and 6 draft. Who knows? We've seen it in this finals, SGA, Halliburton. You can get good players if, you know, the ball bounces your way and you just, you're scouting or whatever, and some of it's luck. But I'd have a hard time with Knipple's skill set, the size, the shooting. He can kind of fit everywhere, good feel for the game. I feel like he's a pretty good bet to go top 5, top 6.
Yeah, it seems. I think I've seen him tied to Charlotte a bunch, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Yeah, Hornets are 4. So I think that's one that really does make a ton of sense. And I'm with you. Like, and look, this like the big guys are kind of becoming back in vogue a little bit too, especially if you've got a really good skill set.
So it's, I mean, Flag's going to Dallas. It seems like Harper's going to the Spurs. It seems like the Giannis to the Spurs. It's just not going to materialize. No. And Giannis is going to stay put at least for the time being. So I guess the draft starts at 3. What does Philly do? Does Philly say, hey, we've got Embiid, we've got Maxey. We're going to, like, what is their timeline? They try to win now, or do they just say, you know what, Embiid's probably a lost cause. Let's build around a younger core of Maxey and whoever we pick here, plus, you know, who they get last year, McCain. What do you think Morey's thinking with the Sixers?
I mean, I don't know what other deals are out there to really make that are going to accelerate this team. The logic out there, or excuse me, the report out there that they talked with the Jazz. I mean, maybe Lauri Markkanen. Do you go out and get him and swap Paul George? I guess maybe. Would the Jazz be willing to do that? Again, remember, George has this long-term deal. Like, that's not really something you want to be sitting on for the most part. But I think either way, it seems pretty solid that VJ Edgecombe is going to be the third overall pick. So, and remember with these drafts and everything like that, because of the league rules, it will be Philly who drafts him. So, like, you know, that's going to still be the third overall pick, whatever it is. So, you know, just keep that in mind when you're betting books and, you know what I mean, a certain team to pick a player, all that kind of stuff, if those markets are up. But it seems that Edgecombe had a really good visit with Philadelphia, according to Givony and others, and that they seem, if they're going to make the pick, that it's going to be Edgecombe. So, seems like that's going to be the case. He's the odds on favorite now to go third overall.
Durant's going where?
I think Toronto, and I like.
Oh, wow, really?
Because look, have you seen the deal that has been out there for him?
No, not the Toronto one.
So Toronto is offering allegedly Jakob Poeltl, Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, and the 9th overall pick. That's a pretty good haul. Jakob Poeltl is one of the better centers in the NBA. Barrett is a pretty good young player to have in that backcourt. And then Quickley is a good player to have in that backcourt. And Barrett's, you know, Barrett's just RJ Barrett. He's a solid role player. And the 9th overall pick for Kevin Durant, that's a really good haul compared to what's going on. And guess what? Like, look, I'm with the thought process because we had this conversation with Damian Lillard was on the move. Sorry, dude. If you don't have a no trade clause, I'm taking 100%. The best package available. I am not beholden to you in any way, shape, or form. Now, I think you and I disagree on our view of Kevin Durant. I actually think he should be commended for how well he played this year and was actually relatively quiet this season. But either way, my job is to make my team better, 100%. And I will take the best package available. I do not care if I have to send you to Serbia. I'll take it.
100%. No, and I'm not even knocking his play. It rubs me the wrong way. His last 3 or 4 years, where, all right, I'm with the Nets, either fire the coach or trade me, and only trade me here. Then you trade me to the Suns, and that it doesn't work out. And then, as your building is burning to ashes, I knock on the door of your office and say, hey, by the way, I'd like to be traded, and here's my little list of three teams. Like, go to hell with your list. I have no players. I got Booker, but I have no assets. I traded them all for you. I can't just give you away and where you are. I mean, that bothers me, the entitlement of
Well,
these guys. But he's fine.
I would say my argument or my rebuttal would be
Yeah.
two things. First off, I'm not an Ishbia guy. I think Ishbia, in the
Oh,
sense of being an
he's been
owner, yes,
terrible.
he's been absolutely terrible. And if I'm Durant and the complaint is we have no assets, yes, you traded some for me. You also traded a haul for Bradley Beal, who is absolutely
Yeah.
awful, right? So, like, that's not on me. I just think Ishbia is not very great. And, like, I agree. Like, I think there's things to, I'm not saying Kevin Durant's perfect, but in the grand scheme of things, I was actually like, I thought this year Durant was pretty solid.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting. Like, if you're Toronto, to your point of what we're talking about here,
Where does
you're
that
giving
put
a,
you?
yeah, right. I mean, but here's the thing, and this is very similar to what we just saw with Desmond Bane. These are the ripple effects of Jason Tatum tearing his Achilles, because there is a vacuum of power at the top of the Eastern
Yeah.
Conference. And so if you're any of these teams, Toronto, Orlando, who just got Bane, right, you're trying to acquire assets because you have a very soft ceiling right now to potentially move up in the Eastern Conference. If you get a fully healthy year from Kevin Durant and Scottie Barnes, it's a pretty good duo to have in an Eastern Conference whose best team is Indiana. And then after that, you have no idea who.
Yeah, I guess if you're Toronto, you talk yourself into, hey, I could win a round, and who knows? I'm 2-2 in the second round, and the ball bounces my way. I look up and we're in a conference finals. I don't think they're a title team. I don't think anyone thinks they're a title team. They're probably not a conference finals team. So I'm probably not getting a 37-year-old. Plus, you add the dynamic of, is Durant going to be happy in Toronto? I know I don't want to have to appease him if I'm Phoenix, but if I'm Toronto, do you want to come here? Or are you going to come here and pout and just want to be traded? That has to be thought of. Plus the added dynamic. Remember, he tore his Achilles in Toronto and the fans cheered momentarily.
Oh, sure.
He's always been a sensitive guy. I mean, I'm sure that's not something that he just, oh, bygones are bygones. I don't know. That's a fascinating dynamic of it too.
Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot about the whole finals and tearing the Achilles thing and whether or not he would be very happy over there.
Same court too. That would be weird. Yeah.
But like, I'm with. It's really interesting to see how these Eastern Conference teams are operating, because all of them think like I'm. But like, to that point, by the way, I'll just put it out here now. I think Orlando's the second best team in the Eastern Conference. I think they're worth betting to win the East. I think they did overpay. You and I texted about it.
Yeah.
I think it's a slight overpay for Bane. But when there is no other true solid second team outside of Indiana, that's going to be the best team in the NBA next year defensively, and they're going to be able to win a crap ton of regular season games and find themselves as maybe the 2 or the 3 seed in the East. I think it's totally worth it.
I've done a 180. My first reaction was sticker shock. I text you and was like, oh my God, what an overpay this is. By the time I did my podcast, maybe 8 or 9 hours later, I said, you know what? I probably wouldn't have done it because, again, I'm not a title team and he's not like a great player, but what are you clinging to if you're Orlando? What are those picks going to be? You're in the play-in every year. You haven't won a playoff series in 15 years. You know what? Go have some fun. Even if not everything has to be a championship. So what? You win a round, you maybe win a second round, and who knows in the East? I get it. And if you're good, those picks aren't going to matter that much. So I'm fine with it. It's probably an overpay slightly, but Bane's a good player. You know what? You're Orlando. It's not like you're going to trade for Jokic or sign Luka Doncic in next offseason. You got to take what you can get at some point.
It's a hand and glove fit, not the OJ kind. It's perfect. And
Yes.
I think that they're going to be a brilliant team for the most part. The offense is still going to stink a little bit, but the defense is going to be awesome.
Last one. What are the other? You have any crazy offseason predictions? Does Memphis go completely and like blow it up? Giannis goes somewhere? Anybody we're not even thinking of, get traded? Anything?
I'll say that the crazy one I'll leave with is. See, actually, if you remember, I actually last summer I got the right one. I came on and told you that Jimmy Butler wasn't going to be on the Heat that
Good
by the time the
one.
trade deadline
That's
came around.
right.
So I will say that the crazy thing will be Jaren Jackson Jr. will be the lone remaining player of this core for Memphis by the time we get to next year.
Wow, so Morant goes somewhere.
I think they're
I could see it.
rebuilding.
I could see it.
And he's like, I don't mean this. I think we use this word a ton. He's one of the more overrated players in terms of his status in the league as a superstar. He's played 54% of his games since
He
his
can't
rookie
shoot.
year. He can't shoot. He's actually not that good. If you really watch and look at the numbers, he's not a good half court player at all. He does a lot of his damage in transition. I just think that's a guy that if you're trading him, it's probably for pennies on the dollar, but I mean, I think you were building around Jaren Jackson Jr. You're clearly re-signing him. That's what some of their moves are indicating here. They're going to sign Jaren Jackson Jr. to a big deal. But I think Ja is – I think the time is time. It's time to move on.
It would just be – seem like a half measure. If I'm going to get trade one of them, and the same thing goes for Bane. If I'm going to trade Bane, I'm just going to trade all of them. And you know what? Draft it. Take my chance with the draft. I'll eat – I'll take my medicine for 2 years. I'll go the OKC route, the Nets route. I'll just stockpile my assets, and I'll be as bad as possible. There's no reason to build around JJ. I'll just get rid of all of them.
Yep. Completely agree.
The Lakers are coming, JVT. The Lakers finally have an adult in the room. He's going to spend some money. No more losing Caruso for nothing. I'm almost as excited as a Laker fan as the Luka deal, as Jeannie Buss selling the team. I'm almost that excited.
It's super underrated. By the way, look out, Rob Pelinka. Your days are numbered. Like, and you've spent years stepping in it and being Jeannie Buss's best friend. There's finally going to be an owner in town that's going to look at this and go, dude, you're actually terrible at your job. We need to get you out of here.
If people don't know, because Jeannie Buss has a lot of friends in the media, so they protect her and they don't really throw her under the bus, but the infrastructure of the Lakers of, like, Kurt Rambis is making major basketball decisions, and it's all basically just her friends and her friends' husbands, and it's all just like an incest kind of vibe where these people that are in no business being in power are in power. Lakers are actually going to be well run at some point here, I would think.
Yeah, I think they are. And I thought so. Windhorst brought up a great point on this, which was they, like, the people think that this means they're going to spend money on all these players, but it's actually they're going to invest in so many different aspects of the team, scouting, player development, things like that. They're going to bring in the best of the best. It's actually what Ballmer's been trying to do behind the scenes for the Clippers, and that is what they did with the Dodgers, and that's ultimately what happened. Like, yes, they're throwing all these monies at these players, but think about how good the farm system is for the Dodgers, how good player development is. Like, they've invested at so many different levels for the franchise, and
analytics,
I think they're going to do it here.
Analytics department, yep. All that 100%. Stuff, medical, yeah. Because they really, I mean, they should have probably gotten one more title out of LeBron and Davis. They really, that team deteriorated after that bubble title. I mean, you could say what you want about this bubble title, but after that, I mean, they just, two of the, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 best players in the league, whatever you think of Davis, and they had the one conference final, but they should have gotten more.
Yep. You could make the argument that that was a failure, like going to get Anthony Davis. Yeah. You could make that argument.
It's hard when you win one, because one is a lot, as we all know. Like, winning one is a lot, but yeah, they did kind of botch it around those two. JVT, this is awesome, man. Appreciate it. Money moves, Stormy. She's putting up with you. You're putting up with her. No trouble on the horizon.
I mean, there's a little bit of trouble, but we had a good bonding trip out in Omaha, so I think that helped it out.
Yeah. How many jello shots did you guys have?
I think I ended up with 18. I don't know how many she had ended up with. Over the course of 3 days. Like, I was kind of taking it easy. I'm not a big jello guy.
Yeah, it's a lot of gel. It's a lot of sugar. I mean, that's hangover next day. A lot of sugar. All right, JVT, where can we find you?
At me, JVT. I've been writing our MLB columns in the stead of Adam Burke, who is on vacation. You go to VEASAN.com, check those out as well. And money moves, but I'll be on vacation starting Friday afternoon. So don't check in for 2 weeks.
All right. Enjoy game 7, man. We'll talk again soon.
See you, buddy.
Rate, review, subscribe, goldboys.com, the Discord, a game 7 on Sunday. We will record right after. Talk to you Monday. Enjoy the weekend. See you then.